Welcome to Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, where we help parents and coaches instill confidence and ensure success in young athletes.
This is Lisa Cohn. Today I'm the Ultimate Sports Parent. I'm here with Marty Shupak, a longtime youth coach and president of Youth Sports Club. I'm also here with my brother, mental game coach Dr. Patrick Cohn. We're going to talk about how coaches can build kids' confidence during practices. Hi, Marty. Hi, Patrick.
Hi there, Patrick. Hi, Lisa. How you all doing out there?
Hi, Lisa.
Good.
Get our new program, The Ultimate Sports Parent, a 14-day plan for kids' success in sports, by visiting the product section of youthsportspsychology.com. You'll learn how much pressure is too much, what to do when kids underperform, how to react to kids' losses, how to deal with difficult coaches, little playing time, and more. Visit youthsportspsychology.com, and while you're there, pick up our free ebook.
Well, Marty, can you tell us a little bit about your work in youth sports to begin with?
Sure, absolutely. I happen to have a master's degree in physical education, and I began coaching in youth sports when my oldest son, who actually now is grown, was playing baseball, and I went to observe a practice, and the practice consisted of about 2.5 hours of straight batting practice, of which one player was active and the rest of the players were literally bored and swatting flies in the outfield and throwing dirt. So I went to complain to the board of directors, and they said, well, if you think you could do better, we'll give you a team next year. So I took a team, and that's how it began. I've coached 19 years, mostly baseball. I've coached basketball, and I've also coached soccer for 2 years. My main interest is an area that I think is drastically overlooked in the sense that the interest is in practices and efficient, stimulating practices for the kids and developing self-confidence and self-esteem. And I think a lot of parent coaches and parents themselves have their intentions are very good. However, I think they really have to work at it. And I did work it at the beginning, and when I first started coaching, my practices weren't much better. I did a lot of trial and error investigation, and since I started, I've run over about 1,200 youth sports practices, and I'm still trying to improve every year.
Now, tell me a little bit about the value of being positive. That's something you emailed me about.
Sure. I think a lot of coaches, and I'm going to relate a lot to baseball, but you could really take this, I think, to any sport. And I'll just give you an instance. And in T-ball starts when kids are 5 and 6 years old. And there's, as you know, the ages from 5 to 12, there's a big differential from year to year. So when a team meets, the 6-year-olds have already played a year. The 5-year-olds are sort of asked to hit a baseball off a tee, which is not really that big. And it's very hard for them the first few practices to have a lot of success. So what I instituted, I know when I coached T-ball and when I was T-ball commissioner, I said, look, let's do this. The first two practices with the 5-year-olds, and we could do the 6-year-olds too, take a batting tee, take a new, clean bathroom plunger, turn it upside down in the batting tee, and instead of putting a baseball, let's put a kickball up there. And this way, the kids have a much easier target, and they'll experience a lot more success, and they're really gaining a lot of confidence. And after hitting the kickball a number of times, you could work your way down to, like, a softball and then to a baseball.
That's a really great idea. Now, Patrick, what's your view of this, the importance of making sure that they succeed in their practices?
Well, as you know, we talk about having fun, and if kids go out there and they can't hit a tee ball, if they're successful 1 out of 10 times, that could definitely have an effect on their confidence and not have fun with it, obviously. So I think there is a push in youth sports right now to provide experiences for beginning athletes that they experience a lot of success in what they're doing. I think that's what Marty's talking about, is just when they first start out in that hitting arena, that they experience a lot of success with it, and then they're going to have more fun as well.
Right. And I assume that as they get older, they should experience success during practices as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, you could take this different things already to the 11 and 12-year-old level. And also at that level, too, I just want to point out, I run some pretty intense practices that they don't last longer than an hour or an hour and 15 minutes. And they're very upbeat. I try to run 5 to 7 different drills. I like to intertwine fun drills with skill drills, too, usually having a fun drill after a skill drill. And also, I always like to leave the practice on a high note where the players are very stimulated, and they're looking to come back to the next practice, too.
Right. Now, can you explain to me what a fun drill is? I think of that as red light, green light for 5- and 6-year-olds.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll mention two things. First of all, a fun drill for 11- and 12-year-old can be hitting a kickball off a tee and having a little game, and they run the bases.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be surprised, because I remember way back when I was growing up around the New York area and I was a New York Yankee baseball fan, one of the most popular games I remember hearing stories in the locker room were these major league players playing a game of woofer ball in the locker room. You know, Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris used to do that too. So there's nothing wrong with playing a game, you know, that 5- or 6-year-olds play if they're 11- and 12-year-olds.
Right.
Okay. The other thing I want to mention also, too, is there are excellent ways to motivate the 12-year-olds, 11- and 12-year-olds, to increase their skills. And one of the ways that I try to do that is I try to teach the skill of bunting, which is a big part of youth baseball at that age. And when they take batting practice, what we do is we set up 2 cones right outside a home plate where they're actually supposed to bunt the ball. The first 2 pitches, we have them bunt. If the ball goes between the cones, we reward them with an extra swing for batting practice.
Oh, so, that's a great idea. So, again, you're giving them positive reinforcement.
We're giving them positive reinforcement, but not only that, we're actually teaching the kids to become better bunters, and they're going to self-motivate themselves. I've had players at the beginning of the year that were terrible bunters that will come to me or some of the other coaches and ask for extra help in bunting just so they could gain extra swings in batting practice, and this will carry over into the games. When if I'm in the third base coaching box and I give them a sign to bunt, they'll become proficient bunters and they'll feel confident in bunting at that time.
Now, I want Patrick to say a word about confidence and building confidence and the importance of it, which is exactly what you're doing, Marty.
Well, you know, I like all the things that Marty's saying. I want to pick up on something that Marty said earlier about specificity training. And specificity training is a principle we talk about in motor learning and sports psychology. It's the idea of kids have to find a way to be able to take the practice to competition. So what I find, Lisa and Marty, is athletes can have a tremendous amount of confidence in their practice routines, but then they go to competition and they don't have the same confidence. So they have less confidence in competition than they do in practice. So the idea of specificity training is that athletes practice in a way that's going to mimic what's going to happen to them in game situations. So, for example, for a soccer team, they would simply scrimmage, rather than do drills the whole time. If you do drills the whole time, kicking drills or passing drills, then how are they ever going to put it all together in a way that they're going to be able to use in a game? So part of building confidence is using that concept of specificity training, because you want the athlete to be confident when they play games and in competition, just like they are in their practice routines.
Now, and Marty and Patrick, do you find that coaches sometimes focus too much on drills in a way that either tires the kids out or makes them lose interest? Because I see that a lot here in Portland, too much drilling and not enough playing.
First of all, I agree with Patrick that you do have to have scrimmages also. It gives you the best type of experience. And I don't think there's a lot wrong with drilling. It's the way the people are drilling the players, where only one or two out of 12 players are involved. And just to give you an example, with batting practice, which I mentioned, I have a certain way of running batting practice where it's very upbeat and quick, and we have an on-deck hitter, which I'm sure your audience knows of, and the on-deck hitter is always ready to hit. But besides that, I have a double on-deck hitter who's on the other side of the fence, and he's hitting off a batting tee with a parent or an assistant coach. I have a triple on-deck hitter on the other side of the field, on the other side of the fence. He's hitting what we call the soft toss drill with another coach, where he's tossing up what I call a rag ball, rags, which I cover with 2-inch masking tape, and hitting balls against the backstop, the other side, or the back of the dugout. And what this is doing, it's helping the muscle memory. They're warming up before they get into the batter's box. So, in essence, instead of having 5 or 7 swings, they might be getting 10 or 15 swings on the batting tee and another 10 or 15 swings on the soft toss drill. And instead of having only one person involved, we have 3 people involved, actually a 4th who's on deck.
Right, so you engage more of them at once.
Exactly. That's the whole essence of my philosophy and what I try to instill in other coaches. And it doesn't have to be baseball. And it's funny, you had mentioned before, and I just happened to brush over it, you had mentioned when you think of games, you think of red light, green light. I want to tell you something. When I was a soccer coach with the younger players, we instituted a game of red light, green light, 1, 2, 3, but we put a soccer theme in with a person approaching the person that was it. They'd have to kick a soccer ball.
Right. We did that. I did that as a coach of 5 and 6-year-olds, and actually the kids just love it.
Right, right.
And that's what makes it fun.
Yeah. Now, I just want to mention, if you don't mind, we were talking about kids' confidence, and I just want to mention the self-esteem. One of the things that coaches tend to do, if a player is, like, for instance, in baseball, he's batting 3rd or 4th in the lineup, and let's say he's just not hitting the ball and he's in a slump for 2 or 3 games, a lot of times the coach will drop him down to, like, 8th or 9th in the order. And I sort of disagree 100%. What I try to do is, instead of dropping him down, I put him up first. And this is doing a couple of things. What I'm doing is I'm showing him that I really have confidence in him, number one. And number two, he might get an extra at-bat or a second at-bat and see better pitches. So I'm giving him a better opportunity to be successful in the game.
Right. That's a great idea. I've heard other coaches who will put kids in who are struggling a little or not playing their best. They'll put them in with strong players and make sure that the strong players interact with them in a way that makes them feel good about themselves.
Right, right, right. Well, you know, a lot of times, and it's funny, and this happens at all levels, some of the kids that are even weaker, like, their game will be upgraded playing with better kids.
Right. Now, Patrick, do you have an opinion about this whole idea of taking a kid who's not doing so well or maybe a slightly weaker player and trying to boost their confidence and self-esteem?
Well, I did want to comment. Yes, I did want to comment on the drills question that you had as well. There needs to be a combination of drills with scrimmaging and with actual competitive-like play, in my opinion. And it can't be lopsided on one end or the other. Maybe you could say early on in learning you might have more drills. But I know the younger kids get turned off by drills, my daughter in particular. That's her number one complaint. They're doing drills, drills, drills. I want to do more games. So I know kids complain at a very young age if they're doing too much drilling and not enough fun games.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you just don't mind, Patrick, I sort of agree, and I know you're living with reality with your daughter, but again, I would say it depends upon the drills and how it's intertwined into the practice.
Sure.
I know, for instance, in soccer, kids love to scrimmage. In basketball, kids love to scrimmage. And in baseball, kids love to scrimmage. In baseball, kids love to hit. In basketball, they love to shoot. In soccer, you know, they love to shoot also. But if we could intertwine it, different creative drills, and reward them too, and don't deny them a scrimmage, I think we're really helping them out a lot.
Well, yeah, I like your ideas, Marty, because I don't see that often, you know, a hard drill and then a really fun one, and that probably would create the feeling that Patrick's talking about of also of just having fun and being more relaxed.
Right. And,
well, and I was speaking about tennis, too,
which is
very repetitive.
Right.
And they're always giving her instruction when they're drilling. They're giving instruction on every
right.
shot. And that just gets old for the kids. It's like, oh, you know,
right.
this is too much because it's repetitive. They're given instruction, and then they feel like they're doing something wrong. They get constructive criticism, and they feel like they're doing something wrong on every shot.
Right. Patrick, you know, you bring out a great point, and I do a number of clinics for parents and youth coaches around the country, and I try to tell them we have a tendency to, and I'm sure you've had the expression mentioned on your show a lot, to overcoach and underteach. And what I mean by this is talking to, let's say, a youth player, if you saw or if a coach recognized he's doing like anywhere from like 12 to 15 things wrong when he gets into the batter's box, I would tell the coach or the parent, you know what? The child's 10, 11, or 12 years old. Instead of going through all 12 things, let's pick out the 3, 4, or 5 most important things and reinforce how to correct that, and then we can progress to the next step. What we don't want is for the player to get into the batter's box or at the service line in tennis and have all these things going around in their mind thinking what they have to do. I think we're doing the kid an injustice, the child, and I really think you have to concentrate on the most important things and take it from there.
Right, especially with the young kids.
Right.
And I think in our workbook we talk about the importance of helping the kids focus and focus on the positive rather than the negative, right, Patrick?
Yeah, and we talk about parents, what they can do prior to games as well is not get into that overcoaching mode, not bring up a lot of technical details to allow them to just go out and have fun and play. That games and competition is a time to just go out and play and not fill them up with a lot of technical details and overcoach them, which they think is the right thing to do, but it will actually confuse the athlete, like you said, Marty.
Correct.
Right.
And I just want to throw one other thing, and I know your wonderful show has discussed the importance of parents' meetings before the season. And one of the things I love to bring out that I go over every year, I tell the parents, please, when your son or daughter is in the batter's box, please don't start yelling out instruction because by that time it's not going to help them. The instruction should be given in practice. If you're yelling out to them, move up in the batter's box, move back in the batter's box, choke up in the bat, put your elbow up, put your elbow down. It's really not going to help them, and you're going to hurt them more.
Just a distraction.
Correct. I would always rather have a hitter who's more relaxed and doesn't have the best form than a player who's skilled but is tense at the time he's in the batter's box. It's the same thing when a basketball player is at the foul line. You want to be as relaxed as possible.
Oh, and we address that in our workbook. We talk about the importance of ensuring the child feels confident enough to play freely and intuitively rather than mechanically and tentatively.
Right. That's right. That's very, very true. Another thing, too, and I just want to chirp in there. I hope you don't mind me giving some of these ideas because I try to do this at these clinics, and I try to tell coaches, look, you know, there are ways to turn a negative into a positive. And one of the instances I give is that a typical youth baseball team will have about 12 players. And usually before the game, the coach will read the batting order up to the players. And when he gets to the number 8 or 9 hitter and he mentions the player, you'll hear like a groan or a moan. He'll be disappointed. And what I tell my team and the parents at the parents' meeting, I say, look, our policy is if your son or daughter is batting 8th or 9th, they guarantee to play the whole game. So turning this negative into a positive, when you read their name and they're batting eighth or ninth, they'll let out a cheer that they know they're playing the whole game. And I highly recommend this technique to a lot of parents that coach baseball or softball. It really works, and it helps the child also.
You know, that's a great idea. That's a great motivator. On our team, sometimes I'll tell the kids, if you're willing to play goalie when nobody wants to play, you get to play the whole game. And then, then they'll step up to it. Well, now we're running out of time here, Marty, which means we'll have to have you back for another show. And I appreciate you joining us.
I would just love to mention my website, if I may. It's the youthsportsclub.com. And feel free. I have clips of some of my videos. And, again, my thing is practicing, running efficient practices, and really helping the player's self-esteem and transforming these skills into games. One last thing I just want to encourage parents. We tend to really involve our kids. Sometimes we overdo it. Please give your kids a chance to have some spare time and also to be imaginative and be creative in their own backyard. It's very important for the kids.
I agree. We actually talked about that with in a previous podcast, the importance of being creative and how it helps you in sports. Well, Marty, you have a ton of great ideas, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
This has been a real pleasure. You're doing a great service to the audience. I hope to come back again, Lisa.
All right. Thanks, Marty. Thanks,
Patrick.
Thank
you, Marty.
My pleasure.
Be sure to visit youthsportspsychology.com to get our new workbook CD program, The Ultimate Sports Parent. You can also pick up our free ebook, 10 Tips to Improve Confidence and Success in Young Athletes. That's youthsportspsychology.com.